Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast. Our goal is to reframe, simplify, and focus on our mission to make disciples in a post-Christian culture. We discuss reaching new people and raising up leaders while removing the barriers of churchianity. I'm Eric Bryant, one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, author of Not Like Me, and resource provider at ericbryant.org. In this episode, I interview speaker, veteran, and writer Benjamin Sledge of the heartsupport.com team, helping young people overcome anxiety, addiction, depression, and suicide ideation. Ben Sledge with me today. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm good. Stuck in quarantine like everybody else on the planet, going a little stir crazy.
It is a crazy time, man. And I want to hear some of your insights. I feel like what you've been doing with Heart Support is actually a great example of how to do ministry online. You guys have done so much good for people that you may never even meet face to face. Of course, you did a lot, you know, with the Warped Tour and all of that. But maybe for those who are unfamiliar with Heart Support, talk about your role there and what Heart Support does.
Yeah, so I guess I could start with the background. That's going to be the easiest way to kind of give you an insight into the organization. Heart Support was founded by the lead singer of a Grammy-nominated metal band. His name is Jake Lors. He's the lead singer of August Burns Red. And he's a Christian. He's at Gordon Cornwell Seminary. Just kind of crazy, you know. Here's a touring musician who loves the Lord and wants to kind of impact his fans is really what it kind of came out of. And what happened was years ago, he had fans come up to him and just explain the struggles that they were facing in life and how his music and the lyrics that they wrote resonated with him. And Jake realized, you know, he couldn't just give him a 5-minute pep talk and be like, you know, see you at the next show. Cause he was hearing stories of things that were personal to him and at the same time, very disturbing. So there were stories of sexual abuse and Jake himself was a survivor of sexual abuse and then depression and suicide ideation, addiction, anxiety. And he realized that these people were using music to cope with a very difficult circumstance in their life. And if you're like most people, you use music on your good days and your bad days. On your bad days, you go through a really bad breakup, you listen, you know, like Air Supply, I'm All Out of Love, you know, something like that. And on your best days, you know, you have those little pop jams, or for me, it's metal. And you're listening to that and getting going. You know, there's a lot of gym music out there too that gets people invigorated. So he realized that was kind of a band-aid over a bullet hole. And he spent one evening outside the Chicago House of Blues. And he was praying in an alleyway and he said, God, you've given me this platform. What should I do with it? And he got an idea to build an online community where people could come exactly as they are and explore healing. And one of the things that he saw that the church wasn't really doing was addressing mental health concerns. And he saw that most of this generation and the way that everyone was heading was online, a completely online generation. And so he wanted to be able to impact people in the United States and worldwide. And so he kind of started this online movement called Heart Support, because we believe issues that pop up are issues of the heart, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he founded it. And just kind of started with a rinky-dink, you know, like blog and his friends helping out. And then from there, it just kind of exploded and grew. And we were on Vans Warped Tour. And I stepped in while I was still in my corporate job. And I was serving at Gateway, where we met, and doing young adult ministry. And just knew that I wanted to give back in some way, shape, or form, because here was this guy who was, you know, the lead singer of a metal band. And man, when Christians hear the word metal, they just immediately think you worship Satan and kick puppies and like the whole deal and like you the don't. Dark Lord and we're throwing up devil horns. And what's funny is that so many Christians have decided to go into dark places and be light there. And so for me, growing up as somebody who loved like heavy metal, hardcore metal, and like all the screaming and, you know, there's a lot of of trauma there from me growing up in a very, buckle of the Bible Belt conservative environment, for the style of music I loved and the people that, would go to those concerts. And I was like, man, here's a guy who's making a difference in that scene that could totally flip the narrative for the American church on its head. And just started serving and volunteering. And then like he found out I do graphic design and ministry and like all this other stuff. And suddenly I was like his right-hand man. And it was off to the races. And then in 2013, he said, hey man, I think you should pray about your job and full time. And I said, you don't have any money. And he said, well, raise the money and come work for us. So that's how I ended up there. And that's what we do. And so we've created basically a giant thriving online community with relevant resources so that people can take proactive steps in their mental health and grow stronger. And we very much use the model that Gateway uses, which I believe is the Jesus model, is you talk to people in stories and parables and things that they understand and let them belong well before they believe. And we never aim to push anything down anybody's throat because we want to help people first. That's our number one agenda is let us help you. And if you decide and you see that like what the way that we live our lives and the way what we're talking about as far as God is something that you're interested in, we'd love to walk that path with you. And out of that, we've had so many people who've come from just drug addiction or even the occult. We've had a few crazy stories of that, that have just found freedom and healing and become Christians. So,
well, it's an amazing journey. I mean, being with you this whole time as you jumped in, but just hearing the people that you guys are impacting. And in many ways, even your story, you alluded to it, but you grew up in a, Bible Belt scenario, but you weren't following Jesus when you were in the military. And then when you were back in Austin and, you endured some really dark days in your own life. I love how you've not only found life, as part of the Gateway Austin family, but are bringing that life to others. What are some of the other things you've learned, whether it's investing in young adults or college students, or what even helped you find faith? Especially, I think, for you and others like you that may have been inoculated to Christianity. You thought you already knew this is not what I want. What helped you kind of come to a genuine faith?
Yeah, I think that's a danger that a lot of parents, especially in churches, can make is, you can grow up wild in a crazy environment, and then suddenly you have kids and you're like, oh, I don't want my kids doing the same stuff that I was doing. And it's like, it's time to go to church.
Right.
And they leave kind of that mentality up to the church to somehow like disciple their kids. And that never works out well. And so for me growing up, it was, my parents, they did the best that they could, but we grew up in Oklahoma, the buckle of the Bible Belt. And my parents met at a Bible college, very conservative word of faith movement. So like name it and claim it, like, God wants you to have a Maserati kind of stuff. Like it just real bizarre. And so the more affluent that you were as a pastor in my community, with wealth or whatever, it meant the more that God was blessing you. And so I grew up with a lot of false narratives. My parents went to a church for a while where they just literally screamed at the devil for like 3 hours. It was bizarre. So very, Pentecostal and for me, it was a very, very confusing message because I would hear about this God of grace, Jesus who loves the sinner. And yet at the same time, he just seemed so pissed off the entire time. And he was so mad at like everything that I was or wasn't doing, sins of omission and commission. By the time I was 16, I was just like, man, I think this is all bunk. And it really kind of escalated when the church that I was attending, because my parents were like, you need to find your own church, grow your faith. And I respect them for that. And I want to do the same for my children. The pastor there was like embezzling money, like millions of dollars. Him and his wife it came out that they were like swinging and addicted to drugs. And he was also doing a secretary. I mean, it was just really, 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 really bad. And once I kind of found that stuff out, and they, and the church really buried it, because that I found out through a friend of ours who did the private investigation. And I remember I was outside of a Quick Trip, and there was this homeless guy there asking for money. And I just had this thought, like, what would happen if, you know, that pastor walked out and saw this guy? He'd probably just, you know, shake his hand and tell him, God bless you, brother, you know, get a job or something. And I was like, that's when I realized, like, this is fake. And so growing up in that environment, you can't tell people that, like, you don't believe. Otherwise, all you get are the hell talks. It's like, you're going to hell, you're going to hell, you're going to hell. And so I just kind of silently left, and I enlisted in the military when I was 18. And so that was in 1999. You know, Bill Clinton is president at the time. And, you know, there's the last major war is Vietnam. And then, you know, we had the Battle of Mogadishu in the 90s and the Gulf War, which is very minor. And so things are very chipper. It's going to pay for my college. Introduce me to girls is what I thought. And then, you know, September 11th hit, and my life just took a total different direction. And basically for like the next, you know, 7 to 10 years, it's just war. And it's training for war. It's going to war. And, you know, I end up in Afghanistan and Iraq. And while I'm there, I start to really see the world and the human condition. And it begins to really bother me, because I'd been reading like a lot of philosophy, a lot of different religions, just to kind of gain knowledge. And what I discovered was, we, even though we claim to be enlightened and more technologically advanced and should be more kind and compassionate, we had figured out how to kill human beings in faster and in larger groups than ever before. Drone strikes, great example.
Yeah.
And that existential question alone really bugged me. It was, what do I do with the fact that human beings are really good at hurting and killing one another? And that just kind of began a journey and a search, and led through a lot of heartache and heartbreak, and in my own life through a messy divorce in Iraq. And when I came home, and post-traumatic stress disorder and moral injury and just transition disorders, adjusting back into civilian life after having spent so long at war. And I end up pretty much homeless on my best friend's couch in Austin, Texas, after I've left the military. And he's an atheist, and you know, I'm agnostic at best. I'm like, there's probably a higher power out there somewhere. And he can just tell I'm getting worse, more depressed, more just, you know, angry, violent. And he's like, hey, man, can I take you to church? And I was like, what's that going to do for either one of us, you know? And he's like, maybe we can meet some girls there. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. Maybe they'll have morals or something, you know? Because my wife had left while I was in Iraq. And so I was like, I need a good girl. And I end up at Gateway. And there is really when I begin to hear the message of Jesus. Like, you're not your past, you're not who you are. It doesn't matter what you've done. And I was like, this is a totally different message than I heard growing up. And it fascinated me. And so I kept going, and I was like, yeah, this place sucks. We should totally come back next week. you know, kind of one of those things. And most of the time I was showing up hungover. And two guys, a guy named Josh Reebok and another guy named Andy Baxter, and they both at one point served on staff there, just kind of walked beside me in kind of that messiness. And they never judged me for like the crazy stuff that came out of my mouth or the stupid things that I was doing or the way that I talked about women or any of that. And with time, I begin to observe their lives, because I thought they're probably fake, you know, at first. I thought that's what Christians do, is just, you know, you live one way and then there's the other way. And they were just really honest and open about everything in their lives. And I realized that they were actually living a version of Christianity that I was like, I think this might be real. And that changed everything for me. And I began to ask questions. And, you know, they talked to the way that they talked about their spouses, the way that they talked about life and friends, and the way that nothing was like black or white, but they involved Jesus more as kind of this gray God. And I was like, man, this is all fascinating. And I just remember one day I was in my apartment in Austin, Texas, and I was like, oh crap, I think I've become a Christian. So, and that was kind of the beginning of the journey.
Well, and I've seen you walk alongside people with just as much compassion and even effectiveness. You know, some of those college kids that you were investing in have gone on to seminary and gone off to be missionaries. You know, it's just really amazing to see how those two guys investing in you in the same way you've invested in others. And, you know, I love a lot of what you write is up on Medium, BenjaminSledge.com, but you also have a book on depression called Dwarf Planet. Tell me about some of what you write and how you've used even writing as a way to reach out to post-Christian world.
Yeah. So it's bizarre. You know, I've always done graphic design and I love stories. I love story. I think it's what unites most of humanity. You know, it's why we love movies. It's why we love books. It's a story that captivates us. A good story can captivate anybody. And I think really that's why you saw Jesus teaching parables. Great stories. Everybody remembers them. And so when I met Josh, you know, he's now a Wall Street Journal bestselling author. I'd always had a knack for telling stories and that I wanted to write. And so he just started mentoring me in that process. And then I found out about this platform Medium, which is almost like YouTube for bloggers, in a lot of ways. And a lot of people go there to read and there's different publications. It's like kind of the new Great American Newsstand, but on a digital online presence. And I realized that a lot of the presence there, as far as everything Christianity, was the same crap that I had read growing up, you know, or it was an exegesis of scripture. Like, and I was like, if you're trying to reach a post-Christian world, they don't give a rip about a book that they've never read, and let alone you quoting it. That would be like me coming up to you and quoting Moby Dick and you having never read it and being like, did that blow your mind? And you'd be like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And yet that's the way that Christians operate.
Yeah.
And so, especially in the writing, and I'm like, so you want to reach a post-Christian world, especially in ways that can shape you, you're going to have to tell stories that resonate with their life with deeper meaning and spiritual implications. And there was this quote by C.S. Lewis that I really latched onto, where he said, what we need are not more little books on Christianity. He said, we need more writing on other topics with the author's Christianity latent. And I thought that that was really huge. And so I began writing in that way. And Medium, like their editors, reached out to me, started picking up my articles on stuff that I wrote about Christianity, stuff that I wrote about life that had, you know, my faith there. And it just, they started just sprouting wings. And now I'm like one of their top authors there. I've done investigative journalism pieces with them, just really honed and refined my craft. And then out of that, started writing books for Heart Support, and Dwarf Planet was kind of the one there. Because a lot of people, depression is now, as of 2020, the number one cause of disability in the world. So we are witnessing more and more just kind of a decline in mental health. And you know, the church historically has just been, you know, read your Bible, pray every day, and you'll grow. And what happens when you're still kind of struggling with that, and you have people like Charles Spurgeon, you know, the Prince of Preachers, who dealt with such crippling depression, he couldn't get out of bed some days. So how do you address that to the church and in a world that believes that this is their identity. I am a depressed person, or, you know, the church world, which is, you know, just do these things and depression will go away and yay Jesus. And yet you have Paul who prays three times for his affliction to be, and God goes, sorry, you know, my grace is sufficient for you. So I think there's been a lot of shoddy exegesis in that way, shape or form. And so I've wanted to kind of bridge that narrative and show people historical roots of depression, where it was originally named melancholy, how far it went back, other names for it in church history. There's also one called acedia, which was dealt more with sloth, but it was considered the worst. And I think a lot of people are really dealing with acedia, which is kind of like a similar but a little bit different form of depression. Hmm. But in that way, shape, and form, I take them kind of through this journey in the book, along with workbook exercises to take a whole person approach. Because one of the key things that we must recognize is God created us to be, you know, emotional, spiritual, intellectual, physical beings. And for me, if I came to you and let's say you're one of my college students and you cheated on your girlfriend, right? And you say, I'm depressed. And I come up to you and I go, just take some pills, man. It helped me. It'll help you. That's a complete and utter misdiagnosis. And yet that's the way that we'll often treat, you know, depression. His depression is linked to, the fact that there was a moral failing there and that he made a mistake and he feels down about that. And there's probably some shame and guilt. And so what he needs is more emotional support at that point. So really you have to, and then sometimes it can be multiple scenarios. And if you don't take a whole person approach, you can end up missing parts of the person. So in the book, that's really kind of what I do. And then the other thing that I'm really working on right now is for years, I've just resisted just kind of a call that God put on my life to work with other veterans and mental health. And I was like, I'm not going to do it. And finally my company was like, hey, pray about this. And then God really kind of, you know, shifted gears on that. And I have an agent now, a book agent. She actually launched Marie Kondo's career. So that was bizarre to like kind of have her as my agent. And so she reached out, like I started getting courted after like, you know, my articles and books kind of gained some steam. And she and John Burke, you know, our pastor there, really encouraged me. They're like, man, you should do something on war and faith. And I was like, I'm not doing that. And then they really pressed. And so I'm working on a war memoir that incorporates my journey from where I was all the way to where I am now. Beautiful. And talks, you know, about things spiritually and psychologically, emotionally. And just if you can think of like Band of Brothers or With the Old Breed, which is based on like the HBO series, the Pacific, is that's what they based that series off of. That book meets kind of like a Mere Christianity or Blue Like Jazz. Like that's the book. And I'm just really hoping that it impacts a lot of veterans and especially churches and then civilians who begin to understand the intense struggles that soldiers face and how they can help them process what they've been through in combat. And help them reintegrate back into society, but also give them a higher spiritual purpose. Because there is very much a spiritual nature to war that a lot of people are not grasping in that respect. And so I'm tackling those topics. The proposal right now is being shopped by a few places. So we're just kind of waiting to hear back at this time.
I love your stepping into that. I feel like you brought so much healing and hope to a lot of young people, you know, that wouldn't have had it without your unique approach. And I think the same will be true for those who've served in our military. Yeah. I think this is going to be a really beautiful thing. We miss that you're not going to be in Austin, you know, living up in Colorado now.
I'll be back.
I'm sure.
To and from, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, one of the things too, I know would be helpful. I mean, you described it earlier, but you've built an online community. And a lot of churches right now are reeling and trying to figure out how do we do church online. And you've done such a great job of, like you said, helping people find faith and then find something local because you want that local connection for them. But what would you say to a pastor who's struggling to reach young people, struggling to know what to do in this era of the pandemic? How do you do ministry online and even with young people? What's some advice you have for us?
So the biggest thing, I mean, when the pandemic hit, it didn't affect our work at all. It affected donations and affected obviously our bottom line and fundraising and all of that. And so just like other places, we had to apply for loans and whatnot. Our biggest fundraiser is in April. And it was like, everyone lost their job. Please give us money. No thanks.
Yeah.
In that, But as far as like day-to-day operations, like that's what we do. We were online already, you know, and we were making a difference. And this is a struggle that I think a lot of people are going to have to pivot from, because we had to figure out the same thing. Because at first we were like, everything needs to be online. And then we realized not everything can be online because people need that connection and interaction. And so I think the aspect that a lot of churches do really well is the in-person. You know, obviously the gathering of the saints and the community and getting people into life groups and whatnot. But what happens when you can't do that? And that's really where a lot of pastors are reeling right now. It's like, well, we never planned for this. You know, we never planned. And yet all of us use the internet. All of us use FaceTime or whatever it was beforehand in the future. And really the key thing that I would do is use technology to your advantage right now. When we started Heart Support, we didn't have like an awesome budget. Like we didn't have to file 990s because we were like we had such low income, you know? And so what we realized is there's a lot of free tools that can connect people digitally. Great example. Everybody's using Zoom right now, but we're more of the Google people. You know, you have Google Hangouts and you have Google Meet. And then this is where discipling really kind of comes into effect. Identify your key leaders that can shepherd people well, put them in charge of groups, and then set up like these online groups to meet each week. I'm still doing it, like even from afar. Like I'm meeting with my guys. I have it tonight. I'm meeting with my guys at 8 p.m. And you get online and you talk and you connect and you, because the church really is, and if you haven't figured out the whole live streaming methodology, there's a lot to that that you'll have to figure out, but you can literally log on to figure out how to do a Google Hangout and then get your people doing these small groups, because the church is right there, and that's where life on life and growth happens the most. And so my biggest thing is find the products and the platforms that are free for you right now. Utilize them to your advantage. It's not going to hurt your budget or your bottom line, and in fact it's going to help people to grow. And then just use email communications to send that stuff out, text messaging services if you have to. There's stuff like Twilio that can send it out mass. If you have your people, if you have their emails, you can send out other things to them. Like we have people on our mailing list that we can mass blast and say, hey, we have this live streaming event that we're going to be doing today. I would say if you're looking to learn how to live stream, look on Twitch TV. There's a couple of churches that are already doing online church that way. If you don't know how to do anything, just set your phone up and hit Facebook Live from your church page or whatever it is, you know, and give a message there. The key thing is to innovate. And that's been the beautiful thing about the church as we've marched on and grown since the time of Jesus to now, is we've constantly had to innovate, adapt, and overcome. And that's a very military way to think of it. And that's what we say. But you just kind of have to look at what's around you. And that's the gift of common grace, is God gives us all of these incredible, you know, technological advancements. I mean, think about before the automobile was built, people had to do horse and buggy, or they had to just have local gatherings of their church in areas that they could walk to. So it's really going to be, as that technology advances, like how can you use that to your advantage? Especially in a world that seems to grow increasingly more and more digital. So it's not going to take a lot of time. It'll take some time, but to learn just simple tricks like Google Hangouts, Zoom, Twitch is a live stream platform. Facebook Live is a live stream platform. Or reach, here's the other thing. When we didn't know what we were doing, we reached out to people that did and said, hey, how did you do this?
That's great.
And there are a lot of churches that are doing this well and are going to be willing to offer their help because they want to see the body of Christ grow.
That's awesome. Well, I encourage you, if you've never read what Benjamin Sledge writes at Medium, check it out. From The Great American Swindling of Christianity to 3 Tips to Become a More Dateable Man, BenjaminSledge.com. Heart Support.
There's one Andy Stanley liked and used in a sermon of his.
Hey, there
you go.
And
that one's called Welcome to the World of Post-Apocalyptic Dating.
I love it. Well, Ben, I love you and Emily, and tell the kids hello as well. And thank you so much for what you're doing to get the message of Jesus the way Jesus intended out. Thanks for all you do.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for joining us on the Post Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.